children and women in Gaza. Said noted that Gazan families have been left drowning during the winter days due to impossibility of bringing in tents suitable for shelter, mobile homes, or rubble removal equipment. The official asked, how is it possible to move to the second phase of the ceasefire before Israel fulfills the commitments of the first phase? Regarding the group's weapons, the official said Hamas's position is firm and it believes that disarmament is equivalent to removing the soul of the resistance. He stressed that the issue of weapons is linked to the Palestinian state. Said emphasized that in the absence of a real Palestinian state, no one will hand over their weapon without anything in return. As the Trump administration signals the start of the Gaza ceasefire's second phase, Palestinians note a stark disparity between American statements and Israeli actions. They assert that Israel has consistently demonstrated a disregard for ceasefire agreements. Our correspondent spoke to some of them, and here's what they had to say.
We are still witnessing the countless violations of the first phase of the deal. They have committed a lot of atrocities and crimes. The Israeli regime has a long history of violating the deals. This is why I don't trust them, and I'm not certain that they will move to the second phase smoothly.
The Israeli regime will never abide by the terms of the second phase of ceasefire deal because it still violates the first one. Moreover, we have a bad experience with the Israeli occupation. Let me tell you that even if they receive their entire dead bodies, they will keep creating more obstacles to avoid the implementation of the deal.
It is very clear that Netanyahu was compelled to sign on the ceasefire, and he is not willing to abide by the terms of the deal. Since the announcement of the deal, the Israeli regime has been systematically violating the deal. Those violations have claimed the lives of more than 380 Palestinians, and the Israeli regime continues to procrastinate in allowing the humanitarian supplies into Gaza. Unfortunately, there's a rift between Trump's statements and the Israeli behavior on the ground. In fact, the Israeli regime has never, ever been adherent to the terms of the deal, despite the fact the Palestinian resistance has shown unwavering commitment to its obligations.
More Palestinian civilians are killed in fresh Israeli attacks in Gaza as the regime's forces continue to violate the ceasefire agreement with Hamas. In one of the latest violations, Israeli forces killed two Palestinians in the Al-Mawasi area of Rafah in southern Gaza. The two teenagers were killed after being directly targeted by Israeli forces. The new fatalities came after three Palestinians were killed by the regime's forces in Jabali al-Balad in northern Gaza. According to local sources, one of the victims was a Palestinian child who was fatally shot by Israeli forces who then ran him over with the tank, splitting his body in half. The death toll from the Israeli genocide since October 2023 has risen to about 70,370, with over 171,000 others injured. Gaza's civil defense teams also recovered 30 bodies from a mass grave inside the Al-Shifa medical complex. Israel's new violations came amid a worsening humanitarian crisis as heavy rains have flooded thousands of tents across the territory. A senior UN official has warned that unexploded ordnance left by Israeli forces in Gaza prevent the return of normal life to the territory, with children facing the greatest risk. The head of the UN Mine Action Program in the occupied Palestinian territory said unexploded ordnance poses a serious threat to civilians, especially as hundreds of thousands return to their homes following the ceasefire. Julius van der Walt emphasized that children are the most vulnerable due to their curiosity and tendency to touch unexploded ordnance without understanding the danger. He said more than 2 years of intensive Israeli attacks have caused widespread contamination with explosive materials. The official added that such explosives have a negative effect on the delivery of humanitarian aid and make reconstruction work extremely dangerous. He added that since October 2023, more than 650 hazardous items have been identified in accessible areas of Gaza, with the vast majority being unexploded ordnance and improvised explosive devices. Well, in Gaza, city families already displaced by war now face another ordeal, the bitter cold and relentless rain. Floodwaters have swept through fragile shelters, spoiling food, destroying belongings, and leaving residents stranded. Let's listen to some of the residents describing their ordeal.
It poured all night, and we were flooded. I couldn't move out as I have an amputated arm and shrapnel in my leg that I can't wade in the water. I started shouting and asked people to help get my children out, but they couldn't. The food was spoiled and the tent's canopy got blown away. I don't know what to do. Please find us a solution. I don't know where to go. Look at the water and the food supplies. I have nothing left, no mattress or anything else. The wind damaged everything, and the bathroom got submerged.
The cold and winter have heaped more woe on us, ruining all our belongings and bedding. I'm an injured man, can't bear the cold. Look at how the tent has become. I can't even go outside. The tent was torn, the bathroom got submerged, and all the food was spoiled.
More European countries are canceling their participation in the Eurovision Song Contest for the year 2026 over Israel's participation in the competition. Now, Iceland has announced its withdrawal from the song contest, citing Israel's crimes against Palestinians. Iceland's public broadcaster, RUV, made the announcement after the European Broadcasting Union decided to allow Israel to take part in the upcoming competition, which will be held in Vienna in May. Earlier, the regime's participation prompted Spain, the Netherlands, Ireland, and Slovenia to withdraw from the contest over the regime's crimes in Gaza. Iceland was among those countries that had requested a vote on Israel's participation, but the European Broadcasting Union decided not to call a vote on the regime's participation, claiming it has instead passed new rules that do not allow governments to influence the contest. Opponents of Israel's participation criticized the regime over its Gaza genocide and its unfair interventions in the most recent competition to the benefit of its entrant. The Arab League has called on the International Criminal Court to include the deliberate medical neglect against Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails in its ongoing investigations into the regime's war crimes. The Arab League's call came after two Palestinian prisoners' rights bodies announced the death in custody of another Palestinian prisoner who was abducted by Israeli forces from the town of Husan, west of the occupied West Bank city of Bethlehem. The 21-year-old Palestinian man was abducted in June 2025 and remained in detention until his death, becoming the sixth Palestinian to die in Israeli prison since the beginning of this year. The Arab League said Israel's systematic violations of Palestinian prisoners' rights are in clear violation of the Third and Fourth Geneva Conventions and international humanitarian law. It also condemned Israel's deliberate medical neglect policy against thousands of Palestinian detainees, including children and women, as a form of slow killing and internationally prohibited torture. Tunisia has agreed to join an international initiative to launch a new freedom flotilla aimed at breaking the crippling Israeli blockade on Gaza. The step follows days of evaluation and meetings between Tunisian representatives and the International Coalition to Break the Siege. Iskandar Naour reports from Tunis.
Tunisians, like other global activists, have always been at the forefront to express solidarity with Palestinians and extend their support for Gaza. Members of the steering committee of the Global Freedom Flotilla confirmed that Tunisia has approved its participation in a multinational flotilla that will soon set sail to break the Israeli siege. The move comes after evaluation sessions and coordination meetings held in recent days with the International Coalition to Break the Siege on Gaza.
The siege and starvation are still ongoing, and therefore efforts to break the blockade must not stop. In this context, we are currently preparing a new flotilla and striving to make it larger, both in the number of ships and participants. It will be more representative of peoples from around the world, and more than ever, it aims to actually reach the Gaza Strip.
Footage of previous flotilla missions departing from Tunisia, along with popular marches, dockside mobilizations, and the flotilla of steadfastness convoy, reflects the country's long-standing public engagement with Gaza. Activists say Tunisia's return to these initiative aligns with the growing public expectations for concrete action beyond political statements.
The announcement was more of a leak and is not entirely accurate. The date and details of the new flotilla have not yet been finalized, but everything will be announced soon about a flotilla far larger than previous missions and efforts. It is expected within the next few months. We will continue working tirelessly to break the siege.
As preparations move forward, organizers emphasize that this flotilla is not only a humanitarian action, but also a form of popular diplomacy, showcasing Tunisia's willingness to take part in international efforts aimed at challenging the blockade and amplifying global pressure for relief. As Tunisia joins efforts for a new freedom flotilla, all eyes are now on the coming weeks, when coordination, logistics, and political sensitivities will determine how soon the ships can sail toward Gaza. Iskander Nawar, Tunisia.
Well, across the world, International Human Rights Day was marked for the 77th year. Many may wonder if U.S. President Donald Trump is familiar with the landmark agreement which was signed by all nations as he continues to ramp up war threats against the Venezuelan people. Rami Mazari reports from Washington, D.C.
Defending rights and justice are attacked.
In 1948, the only human rights agreement embraced by all nations was signed, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It affirms that every person is born with equal dignity and rights, and its basis was the Code of the French Revolution, also called the Napoleonic Code. Many ideas added were inspired by the decline of monarchism and the rise of socialism after World War I, and the failures of fascism and the shortcomings of liberalism shown by World War II. In most of the world, the United States isn't usually associated with defending human rights, but with violence and transgression. Protesters gathered to denounce President Donald Trump's menacing buildup for a possible war on Venezuela.
It's a very authoritarian kind of way of operating, and the world sees right through it, it seems like. But we just have so much military and financial power that there's a lot of, it's not much that our allies really are caring to do about it either.
Decades of sanctions aimed at destabilizing socialist-inspired Venezuela into right-wing civil war haven't worked, so the U.S. has assembled its largest Caribbean armada since 1962, with airstrikes possible at any moment.
Maduro, who's lost citizens to our terrorist attacks on Venezuela, has to react sometime, because what he's showing is his weakness and he's not showing his sovereignty. When a country gets attacked like this, they have to do something, like Iran had to react to Israel and the United States doing something.
Polls show that almost 70% of the American public is opposed to Trump taking military action in Venezuela. A poll released in June, on the day of Washington's illegal strikes on Iran's nuclear energy program, showed that 85% of the United States didn't want to be at war with Iran. That indicates that the figure of 70% would likely rise should Trump start attacks on Venezuela's land.
In 1993, the first UN Human Rights Conference since the end of the Cold War was held in Vienna. The resulting declaration emphasized the universal rights to sovereignty and non-interference. It was not signed by the United States. Ramin Mazahiri, Washington, D.C.
As the world marks Human Rights Day, Yemenis continue to endure the devastating impacts of a conflict that began 11 years ago. Civilians face ongoing violations as the humanitarian crisis shows no sign of abating amid attacks and aid restrictions. Abdul Latif, Amos Shali reports from Sana'a.
Since the Saudi-led war began in late 2014, Yemenis, especially civilians, have suffered severe human rights abuses, extrajudicial killings, attacks on schools and hospitals, sexual violence, and the use of landmines have become routine. The suffering has been exacerbated due to prolonged siege blocking aid into Yemen.
As we mark the 77th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, this remains an incomplete celebration, as we are still living under killing and siege imposed by the systems of global arrogance in many countries, whether in Yemen or Gaza. The world continues to respond to crimes against children and adults with shameful silence.
Human rights documentation shows the scale of suffering. Over 15,600 violations have been recorded across 21 governorates, affecting more than 2,900 civilians. Yemen puts the main responsibility on the United States and Israel, arguing that they are behind the unresolved conflict in Yemen.
Yemenis will continue to pay a very heavy price, as the international community remains silent and has taken no real action to protect them from all these violations. This suffering will not end except with the end of America and the Zionist entity. This is a fact because the United States and Israel are among the worst violators of human rights, despite claiming to defend such rights.
The United Nations estimates roughly 250,000 deaths from years of conflict in Yemen. Millions of people remain trapped in one of the world's largest humanitarian crises, facing critical shortages of food, medicine, and essential services. Human rights groups call on the international community to act urgently to protect civilians and alleviate their suffering.
While the world celebrates Human Rights Day, Yemenis continue to pay the highest price. Without urgent international intervention, violations and humanitarian suffering are likely to worsen further, leaving millions at risk.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavet, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The human cost of the war in Gaza is etched not only in the lives lost, but in thousands living with irreversible physical trauma. According to the Gaza Health Ministry, 6,000 people have undergone amputation since the start of Israel's genocidal war, an explosion of suffering that has reshaped entire families and communities.
Before the war, there were around 1,500 cases, resulting also from Israeli attacks. Now, after the war, the number increased to be over 7,500. This is an indication of their continuous suffering. The prosthetics are not available, and the lack of rehabilitation make the task of this center more challenging.
The ministry reports that children make up one in every four amputees. Their lives abruptly transformed before they even learn to dream freely. Women account for 12.5%, many having lost limbs while trying to protect their families or flee bombardments.
Every day, we suffer much because we don't have sufficient supportive equipment or prosthetics. Moving from one place to another is a struggle because roads are battered and damaged in the war, and the transportations are difficult.
I used to borrow the walking stick from my neighbor. At first, I got shrapnel from an Israeli attack that caused my amputation. And 1 year after the amputation, I am still getting rehabilitation with difficulty, as the cases are a lot and the center is overwhelmed.
Behind each number is a story of terror survived. Yet survival, doctors warn, is only the beginning. Gaza's shattered health system offers little for those who must now learn to live differently. Rehabilitation centers lie in ruins, prosthetics labs lack the most basic materials, and patients often leave operating rooms to a reality without therapy, mobility aids, or even adequate pain relief.
For Gaza's amputees, the struggle now is not only for survival, but for dignity, mobility, and the ability of rebuilding hope in a place where so much has been reduced to rubble. At Ibrahim for Deir al-Balah City, Palestine.
For many people around the world, the first Palestinian Intifada may be a moment of the past, but for the Palestinian people, it remains a movement advocating general, united, and comprehensive resistance to the occupier on their soil despite the constant terror created by the Israeli occupation.
Over the past months, the West Bank has witnessed intensified military raids, home demolitions, siege of cities, and near-daily assassinations and arrests. These events echo the same oppression that pushed Palestinians to rise up 37 years ago.
What's happening in Jenin is part of a wider Israeli plot to pressure and weaken the social and political structure of the refugee camp. The destruction and displacement are meant to change the reality on the ground, even if temporarily, but the resilience of the people shows what the community experienced during the first and second intifadas. In the end, the residents believe they will return because the Jenin camp has always been a symbol of steadfastness.
Despite calculated attempts of the occupying regime to eliminate the Palestinian people through raids, land confiscation, and settlement expansion, Palestinians stand firm today.
We lived through the first and second intifadas, facing raids, demolitions, and tanks, but we always stood our ground. But this invasion has been the hardest. We were forced out of our homes and became displaced in our own land, leaving behind a camp where every corner holds memory. Still, we remain patient and steadfast. The Jenin camp isn't just a place for us. It is our life.
I am a refugee, and today, once again, I am displaced. I lived through raids, fear, and long sieges, and we always stayed strong. But being forced out of the camp this time is different. We left behind everything we built, and the place where we raised our children is no longer there.
It is not a conflict. It is the occupation of Palestine from an outside entity solely created by the West. Palestinians are being killed. Their homes are demolished and being displaced every day. What is happening in the West Bank today is part of a calculated effort to weaken, fragment, and erase the Palestinian people and their personal, culture, and historical identity.
The first Palestinian Intifada, a defining moment 37 years ago, remains a powerful symbol of Palestinian resistance. And today, as Israeli escalation intensifies in Jenin, that same spirit continues to shape the people's determination to withstand the ongoing campaign of violence. Tiba Asi, Occupy Jenin.
Iran's northeastern province of Golestan, once primarily known for agriculture and forestry, is emerging as a major hub for the country's fishing and aquaculture industry, thanks to recent investments in modern fisheries practices, including growth in caviar production.
The province's climate and abundant water resources make fisheries a core development sector for us. We have some of the most diverse aquaculture in the country, producing over 30,000 tons of fish, including caviar and shrimp. This capacity also positions us well to attract both local and international investors.
A key component of the province's fisheries is the Iranian caviar, which plays a central role in Golestan's export-led economy, with over 90% exported worldwide. Notably, one producer alone exported 3 tons of caviar in the previous year.
Our exports reach countries including Mexico and Brazil. This year, we exported 3 tons of caviar and produced 120 tons of sturgeon meat, used both domestically and for export. Our latest shipment also included 9 tons of crab.
Producers emphasize that using advanced technologies has helped improve production quality, representing a significant step toward boosting Iranian caviar exports.
To increase productivity and improve product quality, we enhance our water quality using modern equipment, including drum filters and ozone generators.
Golestan's fisheries infrastructure includes over 120 sturgeon farms, 15 breeding centers, and modern processing plants. Experts say that employing technologies such as recirculating aquaculture systems, AI, and genomics could raise annual caviar production to 200 tons and sturgeon meat output to 1,000 tons.
With premium-grade Iranian caviar gaining global demand, experts say that the right mix of private sector investment, state support, and modern aquaculture science could turn Golestan into a national model for sustainable fisheries.
Farzan Ashurian, Gorgon.
On Sunday, in major Australian cities in support of Palestinians in Gaza, the rallies took place under the name The Genocide Continues. Protesters denounced continued Israeli attacks and restrictions on aid entry into Gaza despite a ceasefire that took effect in early October. In Brisbane, about 1,000 people took to the streets, rejecting a plan proposed by U.S. President Donald Trump to end the Gaza war.
I have family in Gaza, and they're in Jabalia, and they're completely under siege. This peace plan is not a plan for peace. This peace plan is a plan for further occupation and a further annexation of land that is not Israeli land.
Last week, some media revealed that Australia continued to transfer to Israel parts for the F-35 fighter jets and other materials, even on passenger aircraft, until October this year.
Last September, Australia recognized Palestine as a sovereign state, becoming one of more than 150 countries to do so. However, pro-Palestine advocates in Brisbane believe that much more is needed from the Australian government to satisfy its obligations under international law.
It's not enough, but there's also a lot more to happen there. There is recognizing that the genocide has been unfolding in the past 2 years, recognizing that there are approximately 100,000 Palestinians who have been killed, at least 83% of them are civilians and innocent people, women and children.
More protests in solidarity with the besieged Palestinians are expected to be organized in various Australian cities before Christmas festivities. Max Civili, Brisbane.
Tunisia's anti-normalization movement is entering a new phase. Civil society groups have announced the national initiative to gather 1 million signatures to push parliament to adopt an explicit law criminalizing normalization with the Israeli regime. The campaign builds on years of public opposition reinforced by the Trump-brokered Abraham Accords, which reignited fears of regional pressure on Tunisia to follow suit.
This initiative enjoys broad popular support. Our goal is to collect 1 million signatures to criminalize normalization in Tunisia. Since the Abraham Accords, we witnessed growing public concern and we started raising awareness across the region, where we found strong and consistent backing.
But organizers say the process will take time. Signature collection has not yet begun, as activists work to establish a secure legal mechanism for protecting personal data, a major concern among supporters of the initiative.
We began distributing flyers across different governorates, and we are now working on the legal framework for handling personal data in coordination with the Personal Data Protection Authority and the Interior Ministry to ensure full protection for citizens.
Inside the parliament, the legislative path remains uncertain. Although lawmakers submitted a draft law to criminalize normalization, the process stalled after the speaker relayed that the presidency had warned such legislation could harm Tunisia's external national security.
Parliament has already submitted and voted on the draft law, but it was suspended and remains pending. I believe the 1 million signatures initiative can support and intensify public pressure to move the law forward.
As activists finalize the legal groundwork, the campaign highlights a national debate balancing public pressure, data protection, and the political sensitivity of the proposed law. As Tunisia moves toward launching its 1 million signature campaign, the key question is how public mobilization, data safeguards, and political institutions will converge to advance a law that remains both sensitive and highly contested. Iskandar Nawar, Tunisia.
It may be just a song contest, but analysts say this could be the moment that triggers long-awaited international pressure on the Israeli regime over its crimes against humanity. Because Israel will take part, Ireland will not participate in the 2026 Eurovision Song Contest next May. And state broadcaster RTE is also refusing to air the event.
This is great for to see Ireland boycotting. And I wish to see my own home country, Norway, do this exactly same thing. Where we have been discussing the same topic as you guys in terms of boycotting this year's Eurovision if Israel's going to participate.
Ireland will not be a participant in next year's Eurovision Song Contest.
The same step has been taken by public broadcasters in Spain, the Netherlands and Slovenia, generating widespread international coverage. Campaigners say this alone is a major victory, but they insist pressure must now intensify on EU leaders to seize the moment and impose tough sanctions on Tel Aviv.
I am ashamed to be a European at the moment because the European Union is doing nothing at all. It's not doing nothing to stop the genocide, it's contributing to the genocide.
The European Broadcasting Union, which oversees Eurovision, moved swiftly to ban Russia, yet has taken no such action against Israel. Activists argue that if a major country like Germany were to withdraw, the message would be impossible to ignore. But they say Berlin is unlikely to act due to lingering guilt over World War II.
We are seeing a genocide, you know, in front of our eyes. So you can get away from this guilt feeling and try to solve this problem.
For its part, Irish broadcaster RTE says it would be unconscionable for Ireland to be involved in the Eurovision Song Contest, given the appalling loss of life in Gaza and the humanitarian crisis there. While the decision by RTE has been broadly welcomed here in Ireland, pressure continues on the Irish government to cut all trade ties with Israel and also use its influence in Brussels to encourage other EU countries to do the same. Jerome Hughes, Dublin.
The Trump administration has released its national security strategy for 2025. A document that marks stark differences from earlier strategies issued by the same administration. Let's go over some of the key details.
Western hemispheric dominance, aiming to block what it calls foreign influence in the Americas and shift U.S. military assets toward the Western hemisphere, away from theaters whose relative importance to American national security has declined in recent decades.
The strategy outlines a major shift in U.S. military posture. Observers say the move may be linked to recent U.S. strikes on boats in the Caribbean and the Pacific, and efforts to remove Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro by force.
Deterring conflict over Taiwan, unlike earlier strategies that framed China as the top geopolitical rival, the 2025 NSS declares that economic relations are the decisive arena. It underscores the need for allies, particularly India, to increase defense spending to help balance China's growing power in the Indo-Pacific.
The document signals a change in tone. Rather than framing China solely as a geopolitical rival, it emphasizes economic competition as the decisive arena. At the same time, it calls on allies, particularly India, to increase defense spending to help balance China's growing influence in the Indo-Pacific.
Berating Europe, criticizing Europe's migration policies, regulatory focus, and handling of Ukraine conflict, suggesting that the continent must take primary responsibility for its own defense. Switching focus from the West Asia, declaring the region no longer a top priority due to U.S. energy independence and perceived decline in conflict, though still committed to Israel's security. It goes on to argue that the conflict and violence in the region are also subsiding, citing the ceasefire in Gaza and the U.S. attack on Iran in June, which it said significantly degraded Tehran's nuclear program.
It declares the United States energy independent, a claim critics say underscores whether Washington's past involvement in the region was driven by oil. Yet critics point out that Israeli violations of the Gaza ceasefire continue, and Iran remains determined to pursue its peaceful nuclear program. Upon a question about Gaza ceasefire's phase two, Trump told reporters on Thursday that it was going along well. He acknowledged Palestinian deaths as a problem, yet he insisted that West Asia is at peace.
We have peace in the Middle East. People don't realize it. We have tremendous support. 59 countries. There's tremendous support.
Tehran has dismissed the strategy as essentially a security document for Israel. Iran argues that ensuring U.S. access to regional energy resources and guaranteeing Israel's security are the two fundamental issues driving Washington's policy in West Asia. Critics say the new national security strategy only underscores the hypocrisy of the Trump administration, revealing that America's true aim has always been dominating global energy and expanding Israel's power at any cost.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می‌کند ذکر خدا، ذکر الله تطمئن می‌کند.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah, subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. You are listening to the Spring of Truth, and I'm Muhammad Liaquat Abbas, your host, and I'm going to present you a beautiful and a very powerful quote from Imam Khomeini. Our beloved Imam Khomeini says, "Depriving the nation of a few of its popular personalities will not dampen its spirits." What will you get in your mind when you think about depriving the nation of its few popular personalities? It is nothing but just removing them from the face of the earth. Meaning, you have thought it right, meaning martyrdom, just killing them. If you are depriving the nation of a few of its popular personalities will not dampen its spirits. We have a beautiful verse in the Holy Quran where Allah says, if you support Allah, He will support you and make your footsteps firm. And we have a hadith where it says, trust is not measured by men, but it is measured by truth. In the relatability of reality in life example, a forest will not die with the fall of a few great trees, isn't it? The forest still exists. The ecosystem persists and new growth emerges to take their place, often making the forest more resilient. So a movement built on a principle which is immortal, even while the individuals can be martyred, the ideals they represent only grow stronger, rooting themselves deeper in the hearts of the people. The spirit of truth is unkillable. This is very important. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, and say, the truth has arrived and falsehood has vanished. And definitely, batil, the falsehood, is a vanishing thing, is a thing which vanishes. When we speak about truth from this very verse of the Holy Quran, we know that it is talking about the Imam of our time. And it also speaks about those people who are with the Imam of our time, that is, the companions of the Imam, alayhi salatu wassalam. If they were to take us away, if they were to deprive us from our lives, then it's not necessary that the spirits of the people are going to dampen, the spirits of the people are going to fade away. In the history, we see the noble martyrdom of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salam. He was martyred with all his companions, with his family members, and few of his family members taken as captives. We see Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wassalam presented himself on the path of Islam so that the religion of Islam stays alive forever. With this, that is the spirit of martyrdom, he only gave the rest of the world the spirit and the urge to stand up for right. So the spirit is still alive. Even if Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wassalam was martyred, there are tens and thousands of Shias who want to stand up for truth like Imam Hussein alayhi salam did. So it's not going to dampen the spirits of the people. Even if the popular people are going to be killed, like example, there were popular people in those days who were killed, like Ammar Yasir. Example, Abul Fadl al-Abbas alayhi salam, who was with Imam Hussein alayhi salam, Ali Akbar alayhi salam. But still the spirit which is standing up for truth, which is standing up for the religion of Islam, is still alive. So depriving a nation of a few of its popular personalities will not dampen its spirits.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
There was a spring of truth, a selection of Imam Khomeini's viewpoints.
Trusted you a thousand times, but you always bring me back to the same place. My heart is moaning, but you can't hear. What do you care about me except my face? You think you know everything, you think you're enough, but sometimes a tiny virus ruins your life. You have so many heroes, but only in movies. I've tried all you said. Is there any way left to save me? I need someone from heaven. You can heal my soul and not just my body. I need someone from heaven. You can make me free and not just happy. I'm alone again. You show me a new movie, but then everything's the same. You give me small pills and push me to sleep, but you can't change my dreams, they're too deep. You think you know everything, you think you're enough, but sometimes a tiny virus ruins your life. You have so many heroes, but only in movies. I've tried all you said. Is there any way left to save me? I need someone from heaven. You can heal my soul and not just my body. I need someone from heaven. You can make me free and not just happy. I need someone from heaven. You can heal my soul and not just my body. I need someone from heaven. You can make me free and not just happy.
Welcome, kids.
Hey, man.
Hey, girl.
Hello.
Hi.
My brothers, my sisters, and all of my gentle friends. This is a song that I have learned. Let's sing it.
Welcome
to
Kids Corner. And you know, you're not going to go wrong when you're at Kids Corner.
We say, assalamu alaikum, wa alaikum, assalam.
Assalamu alaikum, dude.
Assalamu alaikum, wa alaikum, assalam.
You're listening to Brother Ali at Kids Corner. Are you ready?
Yes.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay?
Okay.
Are you guys with me?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Good job. Mashallah. You guys are doing it. Ah, good question. Good question. I'm about to answer that question.
Our soul direction. He knows everything. Past or future. And aware of every word or gesture. Whatever we do is under his
Kids Corner.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytani rajim. Bismillahi rahmani rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Wassalatu wassalamu ala sayyidina Muhammadin wa alihi tayyibin at-tahirin. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajah. Welcome, dear listeners.
Hello.
Hi.
Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.
And this is Kids Corner. Welcome, everyone.
Assalamu alaikum. Assalamu alaikum. Wa alaikum assalam. Wa alaikum assalam. Come to the masjid. Come to the masjid, wash and pray, wash and pray. These are the things that will keep the devil away.
Okay, in the last session, we were talking about traveling etiquette. Remember, we talked about traveling etiquette, how to travel and all that. But since 15th of Shaban is close, we're going to talk about who, do you know?
Imam Sahib al-Zaman.
Imam al-Mahdi, the Sahib al-Zaman, the Imam of our time. Yes, we're going to talk about him. May Allah hasten his return.
Mahdi biya, Mahdi biya.
Okay, so you guys, you know that he was born on 15th of Shaban, correct?
Yeah.
Where was he born?
Mecca.
Mecca? Oh my God. How are you? Do you have any ideas?
Medina?
No. Okay, any other tries?
Qazamain?
Qazamain? No. Come on. Any
Najaf?
Other? Huh?
Najaf?
No. Samarra. Yes, he was born in Samarra on 15th of Shaban in the year 255 Hijri, that is 869 AD. So he was born in Samarra. You know which Imam he was? Which 12th. Number?
12th.
The 12th Imam. Yes. And what is the name of our 11th Imam?
Imam Hassan Askari.
Imam Hassan Askari, alayhi salam. Okay, Imam Mahdi, his real name is Muhammad ibn al-Hassan, right? His name is Muhammad, the son of Hassan al-Askari, correct? So now his title is al-Mahdi. What does that mean, al-Mahdi? Do you know? No? Okay, means the guided one. The guided one, al-Mahdi, okay? You know, his lineage goes back all the way to who? Imam Ali alayhi salam, correct? He was the son of Imam Hassan Askari, and Imam Hassan Askari was the son of who?
Musa Kazim?
Huh?
I don't know.
He was, basically, I'll tell you, the lineage traces back to Imam Ali alayhi salam, Imam Ali alayhi salam, right? The son of Imam Ali alayhi salam was Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And Imam Hussein alayhi salam, his son was Imam Zainul Abidin. And then Imam Baqir alayhi salam. And then Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. And then Imam Musa ibn Ja'far. That is Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam. And then
Imam
Rida alayhi salam. And then Muhammad ibn Ali. Muhammad ibn Imam Rida. That is Jawad alayhi salam, right? And then after Jawad alayhi salam,
Imam Hassan Askari.
No. Ali. Okay, Imam Ali. His name was Ali ibn Muhammad. Okay, and then Hassan ibn Ali was Imam Hassan Askari, and the son of Imam Hassan Askari is our Imam of the time, Imam Mahdi. Okay, great. So you got it now. So Imam Mahdi is the 12th Imam. Where did Imam Mahdi get divinely appointed as an Imam? Do you know when was he divinely appointed as an Imam? After the death
of Imam Hassan Askari.
Very good. After the martyrdom of Imam Hassan Askari alayhi salam, and that was when 260 Hijri. That is 874 AD. So now, wait a second. He was just 5 years old when he became an imam. Oh my God, 5 year old imam? How is that possible? An imam who's a 5 year old? Is that possible?
No.
You Shias, you believe an imam who's a 5 year old imam? Is that possible? It is possible. If Allah wishes, it is possible, right? I'll tell you, there are similar things that happened in the history of Islam. Right? They question you, how can a five-year-old boy become the imam of the mankind? Huh? You Shias, you tell us how. So the answer is, if Allah wishes, it can happen. And this is nothing new. It happened before Imam, our prophet Jesus, peace be upon him. He was a prophet when he was born, when he was a baby, when Hadrat Maryam, Salamullah alayha, the mother of Holy Mary, the mother of our Holy Prophet Jesus, peace be upon him. When she brought the baby, they accused her. How did you become? You're not married. How did you get a baby? You know, they're